Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. Episode 286, to be exact. I'm Bob Main. I am your humble host. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry one of those cops. Well, episode 286 is here. Holy cow. Episode 300 is only about 14 weeks away. Unbelievable. Boy, I tell you what, time flies. I just want to thank all of you for continuing to listen to my show. That's why I keep on doing it. Well, this episode, I've got two interviews on the same episode. You're going to love these. I am not going to waste any more time talking about these. Let me just do a quick introduction. The first interview is with Edwin and Michelle, two defense attorneys from Texas Law Shield. We talked a little bit about ammunition, about what kind of ammunition is good and not a good idea to carry for self-defense. We also got into some other legal matters. And every time I bring these two on, they always talk about a couple of pending cases. And that's an example here. So for all of you concealed carriers, especially if you're in Texas and a few other states, which you'll hear us mention, if you're not a member of Texas Law Shield or U.S. Law Shield, consider joining. One of the benefits that they have that some of these other programs don't is they've got a toll-free hotline where you can call in and you can speak to an attorney anytime you want just to ask a question that has to do with concealed carry. I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, as usual, you can call them up if you are a member, and unfortunately, if you happen to be in a shooting, after you call 911 and establish yourself as the victim. Why do I always get phone calls when I'm trying to do a podcast? Anyway, after you call 911 and establish yourself as the victim, your next call is to Texas Law Shield and speak to their attorneys. So here you go, Michelle and Edwin from Texas Law Shield. Well, joining me for this segment of the show, I've got Edwin and Michelle from Texas Law Shield back on the show. Welcome back.
Hello. We're glad to be here.
Thank you, Bob.
Hey, well, I appreciate it. You know, every time, I got to tell you two something. Every time I've had you on, the feedback, the emails, and the Facebook posts that I get are very well received. So thanks again for your time.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime we can, you know, speak to people, reach out, address their concerns, we're always happy to do that.
Well, and it's also translating into more business for Texas Law Shield and U.S. Law Shield. So, again, thanks for doing that. Let me just go ahead and start off with the main reason I wanted to have you two come on. And that is, I want to talk about ammunition. Because the last couple weeks, I've been doing some shows on reloaded ammunition. And basically concealed carry ammunition in general. And so I wanted you guys to address that subject. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. From a legal standpoint, what I'd like you to talk about is I'm kind of the school of thought that reloaded ammunition is not a good idea for concealed carry. And I'm also kind of the school of thought that just, you know, common ammunition that the police departments use, common hollow points that typical law enforcement use is usually the best bet. What do you guys think on that?
Well, from a legal perspective, what a person needs to keep in mind is that if, God forbid, they have to use their concealed handgun to protect themselves, they may get an overzealous prosecutor who wants to do anything possible to make them look like a madman. And whether that come down to, you know, ballistics shows that this ammunition was reloaded ammunition, and if they try to bring that up in front of a jury, that is then your defense attorney's job to either try to, A, get that evidence suppressed by the judge, or get a ruling by the judge that this sort of information or evidence should be suppressed, because it has absolutely nothing to do with why you use deadly force in the first place.
That's true.
So it is up to your defense attorney to try to redirect the jury's attention to say, look, this evidence is irrelevant. Let's get back to why somebody used deadly force. Not the means by which they used deadly force, but why. They used deadly force because they were being attacked by a madman with a knife, they were being robbed, and Texas law says that you may use deadly force in these circumstances. It doesn't say by which means are lawful. And, of course, reloaded ammunition is nowhere in the law as an illegal means of using deadly force.
And I agree with you, and that's a great answer. Have you ever had a case where the type of ammunition, whether it's reloaded or not, was brought up as a point in the case?
To date, off the top of my head, no. I cannot think of a prosecutor who used that in an argument.
Can you see a prosecutor using that as a negative if they were reloaded ammunition?
Oh, absolutely. I think a prosecutor, if they got their hands on that sort of information, they would probably attempt to use that evidence as something just to make you look like a crazy person so they can get another conviction under their belt.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead, Edwin.
Well, I was just going to add that's the perfect, there's a legal procedure in place, and I don't want to get too technical with your audience or anything, but there's a legal procedure in place called a motion in limine, and basically what it is that if you anticipate that the other side, in this case the prosecutors, that the other side is going to attempt to try to do something illegal, either bring forth evidence that's not really evidence or bring forth evidence that is irrelevant, that they're doing just for showmanship or just to cast your client in a bad light, you can bring those issues up before the trial in front of the judge and get rulings on them. And like Michelle said, the type of ammo used, as long as it's legal, as long as it doesn't meet the definition of prohibited ammunition or illegal ammunition, the type of ammunition is irrelevant to the case, and no judge really should let that come in front of the jury.
So you said that there's a legal process where that could basically be handled in advance.
That's correct, without the jury ever even knowing or hearing the question, because I'm sure the people are familiar with the law shows and, you know, in a TV show or movie, whenever a lawyer asks a question that the other side doesn't want to answer, they'll stand up and say, "I object." And,
right.
And of course the jury goes, that answer must have been harmful. Why else would he object to that? And it's called, trying to unring the bell or trying to get some jury predisposition based upon a question they know can't be answered.
Right.
Just through this inference. And so the law has a mechanism to deal with that outside the presence of the jury. And so that's definitely something you would try to have a pretrial hearing on to make sure that the DA does not bring up.
Okay, I didn't know that. And hopefully that would be successful. But if it wasn't successful, I mean, the judge could probably still allow that, couldn't he?
Yeah, the judge could allow that. And then it just falls to the defense attorney to make sure that he or she argues that the type of ammunition is irrelevant and keep the jury focused on the circumstances that caused the person to use deadly force, not focus on what they use deadly force with.
Okay, so what advice would the two of you have to concealed carriers in selecting ammo?
Carry something reliable. That would be my concern, what is the, and I don't know this off the top of my head, about what the reliability rates are for manufactured ammo versus reloaded ammo. But I certainly would want to, if you want to reload ammo because it's cheaper and you're shooting it at paper targets at the range, more power to you. But if you're, for that clip of ammo that you're putting in your gun for self-defense, you want to make sure that you get the most reliable ammo available. And also, I've also heard that it's a good idea to mix up your ammo because, obviously a hollow point could be stopped with several layers of clothes. So maybe you want to carry, more solid ball type ammo in the winter, in case you have to shoot somebody through their coats. And basically just prepare yourself and make sure that you have a tool that is going to work at the time that you need it.
Well, I tell you what, thank you, Edwin. I appreciate that. I can speak to a little bit about what you said. I teach a lot of training classes, and I can tell you that the most unreliable ammunition that I have seen typically is reloaded ammunition. And no offense to hand loaders, because hand loading is a great idea. You can save a lot of money. But every time I see an ammo-related malfunction, 90% of the time, it's reloaded ammunition. It's seldom with factory ammunition, and especially with today's good quality ammunition made by the big ammo manufacturers. If you've got Speer or Corbin or Federal or Winchester, something that is very popular, law enforcement uses it, most of those types of concealed carry ammo, they go through a lot of good quality control, and they're normally very, very reliable. So that I can speak to that based on the experience that I've seen coming through class.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but practically speaking, use the manufactured ammunition. But when it comes to the legal side of things, it is your defense attorney's job to, if you do choose to use reloaded ammunition, to make sure that that does not come out in front of the jury.
Yeah, I will say this, though, Edwin, I'm going to respectfully disagree about the part of using ball ammo or full metal jacket. That has a very good tendency to over-penetrate and cause a lot of other problems. Plus, it's not that good of a stopper, really. Typically, most of the shootings that have been investigated, they found that that's not that good of a stopper. So I would strongly suggest just good quality hollow points.
Okay. I can accept that. I'm no ballistics expert by any means.
I'm not a ballistic expert either. I read a lot. I guess I'm kind of a gun geek ammo nerd sometimes, and I read that stuff. And a lot of it's just based on reports that are out there about civilian shootings and things, and even law enforcement shootings that are out there.
Yeah, we've got a gun geek ammo nerd here in our office too. We keep him locked in a room with a bunch of ballistic gel though. So
well, don't lock me in a room now. I'm free here. I'm a free guy.
Yes.
All right. Well, good. Thanks for talking about the ammunition stuff. I have some more questions, but let's take a minute or two. I want you two to re-explain, in case somebody's a first-time listener, what the two of you do.
Well, we are program attorneys for Texas Law Shield, and Texas Law Shield is a legal services company that provides its members with comprehensive defense for the use of their firearm. Use can be displaying your weapon all the way to discharging your weapon in a situation that causes you to need to use it for self-defense, defense of property, or defense of a third person. So when somebody has to use their weapon, they don't have to pay an attorney a $5,000 or $10,000 retainer if they are a member of Texas Law Shield. You have a program lawyer already set up to go to battle for you for the low price of $10.95 a month.
Yeah, and you two are criminal defense attorneys, right?
That's correct, yes.
And you specialize in this type of defense?
Well, it's what our primary concentration is.
Yeah, you're defending lawful gun carriers that are in lawful self-defense shootings, right?
Yes, and keep in mind that that a lot of people have the misconception that if they are involved in a shooting, that most self-defense situations don't actually involve shooting, and a lot of cases where the person just simply displays their gun, or perhaps they shoot a warning shot or what have you, they can be charged, at least here in Texas. There's about a half a dozen different charges they could face. Obviously, killing somebody would be the worst thing as far as what you'd be charged with, but just the myriad of charges with deadly conducts, disorderly conducts, failure to conceal charges, unlawful carry charges, those are the majority of what kind of cases get filed.
And you handle those too?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Michelle, speak to the other states that you also cover people in.
Well, right now we have U.S. Law Shield for those of the states that are not Texas. We are open for business in Florida, Oklahoma, Colorado, and Pennsylvania.
Okay, so
if you've got any listeners out there who are residents of those states, they can become a member of U.S. Law Shield and enjoy the same protection that Texans do.
And in U.S. Law Shield, when they travel, they're covered in how many states?
21.
21 now?
Yes, and yeah, every day we're adding more and more states. I mean, even Alaska and New Jersey, I believe we've added. But for a complete list of the 21 states covered, go to uslawshield.com. You can get that information there.
Now, how does that work? Do they, let's say I travel to Oklahoma and I'm involved in a shooting up there. Do you go to Oklahoma or do you contract with an attorney there?
There is a program attorney there in Oklahoma. I am just a Texas lawyer, so I cannot practice outside of Texas. So, yes, we have a program lawyer in Oklahoma who is excellent. His name is Robert Robles, actually. And that is the attorney that would be handling your case if something were to happen to you in Oklahoma.
I think what you brought up earlier is very important. What Edwin brought up was the fact that you also help people out, even if they're not involved in a shooting, with various other crimes that they could face simply by carrying a gun.
Oh, absolutely. I would say the majority of our cases are displays, because the display of the firearm is all a person needs to do to deter a threat or the potential threat. I mean, we had a guy who was the victim of an attempted robbery at a Shell station, and all he had to do was display his gun, and the bad guy ran off. So it has the intended consequence that the member wants. However, unfortunately, if that bad guy calls the police and says, hey, there's a madman waving his gun around at the Shell station, guess what? The police are going to come looking for you, and there's half a dozen crimes that you could be charged with for that.
Well, that's why I like to advise listeners that the concealed carrier needs to be the first one to call 911.
Yeah, for example, we had a real-life case where a guy was involved in a road rage incident. His car stalled out. Another car was behind him, honking at him. He tried to explain to the guy, look, my car broke down, just go around me. This guy got agitated at him, actually struck him with the car. Our guy went and got his gun out from under his seat. The other driver, of course, backed up, hauled ass. Can I say that?
That's okay. You said it. You're fine.
Left the scene in a rapid fashion. He thought it was over with. And the guy was nowhere to be found, did not call the police. However, somebody in a store across the street saw this, called the police, and said, there's a crazy man with a gun out on the road. And the police tracked our guy down, and the DA took charges on that for disorderly conduct. Even though they could not find the other driver, the other driver didn't report it as an offense. But the DAs carried that case all the way to the day of trial before they ultimately dismissed it.
So, okay, so it did get dismissed, but it went all the way to trial.
Yes, all the way to the day of trial. We were there ready to pick a jury, and finally the DA said, okay, well, I'll just dismiss this.
Oh, great. Okay, nice of him to do that.
Yeah, and so that was a case where, the guy acted in self-defense. He pulled his gun out. It had the intended consequence. He left thinking, oh, well, okay, very, very stressful activity, but, I escaped without being injured. And then the police tracked him down and said, we got a call that you were walking down the road with a gun in your hand, and so we're going to arrest you and charge you with disorderly conduct.
And this is where Texas Law Shield or U.S. Law Shield can come in and help.
That's correct.
Yeah. Now, I just want listeners to realize, don't just rely on scaring the bad guy away, because sometimes if it doesn't work, you better be ready to use your firearm.
That is certainly true as well.
It's the last resort. We never encourage using it, as a primary. If you can de-escalate before something happens, that's always the best thing. But, some people have a false sense of security and think, well, all I got to do is lift up my shirt and show them that I got a gun and they're going to run away. And it's not always the case.
That's absolutely true. Always be on alert.
Yeah. Well, good. And thanks for sharing this. So the DA dismissed that case, but Texas Law Shield, U.S. Law Shield can step in and help with a lot of the representation and the expenses that are associated with that.
Oh, yeah. It was, if he would have been just a person coming into a lawyer's office and say, hey, I'm charged with a Class B misdemeanor, this is the charge. We went to court probably half a dozen times before it got set for trial, and then we had all the trial preparation. And keep in mind, with the day we showed up for trial, we were fully prepared. to pick a jury, try the case, you know, cross-examine and examine witnesses. And so, you know, a case like this, even though it was a misdemeanor, easily would have cost this guy $5,000 to $8,000.
Yeah, and but he was covered.
Yeah, but with Texas Law Shield, he didn't pay any money above his monthly fee.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask about that situation, I think that kind of proves that, you know, as a CHL, as a carrier, you can do everything right and still get charged and still incur a lot of legal fees.
Oh, yeah. Even we have seen castle doctrine situations where there's been somebody trying to break into another individual's home, and they still go to the grand jury. What looks to you and I to be, you know, clear-cut, justified shooting, we'll end up in the criminal justice system entangled in that labyrinth.
Yeah, and I'm glad you guys are bringing this up because, you know, you wouldn't believe the number of people that I hear from that think that, well, you know, Texas is a gun-friendly state and, you know, they just seem like they think that they're immune to a lot of charges and a lot of prosecution when that's not always the case.
That's correct. And what a lot of people don't seem to take into account is that when a police officer arrives on a scene after somebody has had to use their firearm, they're not there to determine whether you were justified or not. They are there to collect facts, investigate, and then turn those facts over to a prosecutor who will then determine whether they want to bring charges against the individual. So a lot of people don't realize that, hey, spilling your guts to the cop and telling the cop exactly what happened, it may not help you because it's not their job to determine whether you're justified. They're going to punt that to a prosecutor who will then let a judge or a jury decide whether you were justified in what you did.
Yeah, that's a good point, Michelle. Thanks. Okay, a listener emailed in a question that I sent you guys. It was about expert witnesses and expert witness fees, and I understand that you've recently made a change in that.
Yeah, we've recently offered an option that covers expert witnesses and bail bonds. We previously didn't have that option because we wanted to keep the price as affordable as we could to members. Because generally, you know, in a lot of cases, expert witnesses aren't needed for every case. In fact, there's been very, very few cases that have actually needed expert witnesses because an expert witness can only testify as to what are facts. They can't testify to legal conclusions. And so you don't have an expert witness that would testify, oh, I looked at this and I found it to be self-defense. That's not what an expert witness does. An expert witness testifies as to things like say things that are scientific or things that are educational in nature. So it would be, you know, testifying with regard to ballistics or shell trajectory or things like that, things that you can then use to claim, you know, that here are the facts, this is why it was self-defense. And so I think maybe there's a lot of preconceived notions out there as to what experts can and can't do. And so, you know, and so we didn't find that to be a primary focus of the program, but now that we've had the program going for a few years, we've decided to offer that as an option to our membership, just like we offer the multi-state program and coverage for minor children. And so for people who would feel more comfortable having expert witnesses as part of their program, they have that option. People who feel more comfortable having bail bonds, coverage. That means that the Texas Law Shield would cover the cost of a bail bond that somebody were to, if somebody were to get into a situation where they needed to be bonded out of jail, then they can have that coverage as well.
Yeah, I think the bail bond coverage is excellent.
Yes, so we now have those two options available to our members.
Yeah, Edwin, to both of you, of the cases that you've handled that actually went to trial, how often have you had to use an expert witness?
Well, we don't, and an expert witness is not really used that often. That's what I'm saying, is that most of the time the facts are agreed to, and the conclusion as to whether or not somebody was justified in using self-defense, that's a conclusion of law. That's what the jury is there for.
Yeah.
And so the judge is not going to let an expert, you know, testify, you know, oh, I think this is self-defense. Like I said, that's the purview of the jury to decide whether or not it was self-defense, because ultimately, the self-defense issue is an argument. It's not, you know, you can't put it forth as evidence like a legal conclusion. It's an argument that the jury should reach that conclusion based upon the facts that they've heard in trial.
And the expert witness helps substantiate the facts.
True. And that may not be necessary. I mean, there's a case that we're actually gearing up to try in the near future, and everybody agrees on the facts. There's no disagreement with regard to the facts. It's just that the prosecutor believes that it is not reasonable to use self-defense in that situation, and we believe that it is reasonable to use self-defense in that situation, and the issue of reasonableness has to be decided by the jury.
Yeah, okay, so the facts are not in question. Everybody agrees on that.
Correct.
Okay, good. Those are all the questions that I had. I'm sure that, you know, go ahead and spend some time. You guys have been gracious enough to give me your time. Go ahead and spend some time talking about a little bit more about Texas Law Shield and U.S. Law Shield and what's going on out there with your company.
Well, every day we get phone calls on our emergency hotline with members who have had to use their firearm, and it's just absolutely critical. We've got the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week attorney answer hotline that we encourage every member, when they have to use their firearm, to call 911 first to report that they have been the victim of a crime. Not that they're not calling to report I just shot somebody, but they have been the victim of a crime, and to get law enforcement out there. And then, of course, to call after that, call our emergency hotline so we can spend a couple minutes with you, either A, prepping your statement, telling you not to talk to the police, or telling you, hey, tell the police officer the entire story. Because with my experience, if I am given 2 minutes with a member of Texas Law Shield, it greatly helps in the long term their case.
Yeah, and I think you, Michelle, just mentioned something that I think is very, very important that people need to understand. And that is, do not call and say, I just shot somebody, but that you're a victim of a crime. I think that's very important. Tell people, why is that important to say that?
Well, because from the get-go, you don't want to paint yourself as the bad guy. And calling 911 to say, I just shot somebody, automatically colors you as somebody, as a madman out there, you know, shooting up God knows what. So you are not calling to report that you used your firearm. You're calling to report that you were just the victim. You're calling to report that somebody just robbed you or attempted to rob you, and that you need law enforcement out there to help you in that, for that crime, not that you had to use self-defense.
Yeah, good point. You know, I said I was done with my questions, but I did think of one because this is actually – I've had a few emails about this. A lot of people who listen to this show, they live in gun-friendly states, and that's one of the reasons why they listen to a show like mine, is because they're into concealed carry. Do you find that it matters much if they live in a gun-friendly area like Texas or others? And I guess what I'm really trying to ask is, are people more immune to prosecution if they live in a gun-friendly state?
Well, we can speak about Texas, and Texas is obviously a big state, and there are laws that are friendly, but basically the law is as friendly as the officer seeking to enforce it. And here in Texas, we've got over 75,000 licensed police officers, we've got over 1,200 municipalities, and we've got 254 counties. And you may be in an area where the police are not as well trained, they may have a bad attitude towards guns, they may have a predisposition or even a policy that everybody who is involved in a gun incident has to be investigated. So unfortunately you have to be more specific in what you're looking at. Yes, Texas has been viewed as very gun friendly, however, that may not apply to some cities. There are some cities that are notorious for their anti-gun activities. And so it all depends specifically on where you live, what officers are going to be involved, what city or what county they're from, as to how well your use of force is going to be treated.
Well, you know, you're exactly right. I live in San Antonio, and I'm actually in Bexar County, and I've heard of some instances where the police, a lot of the police in Bexar County are not quite so friendly. Travis County as well.
Yes, that is correct. And, you know, and also it comes down to individual officers. For example, I'm sure you're very familiar with the open carry folks.
Yes.
Yes. And we had a situation where a guy, he was actually open carrying for a purpose. He was too young to have a concealed handgun license, so he carried his rifle legitimately for self-defense. He wasn't part of a march. He wasn't part of a movement. He wasn't trying to make a political statement. He was just trying to get to and from the grocery store without being robbed. And he was stopped on, he got the store, he got the grocery store's permission to carry. He had no problems for a couple of months. And then just one day out of the blue, he was accosted on one trip to the grocery store. He was accosted by police officers from three different jurisdictions who were giving him a hard time about carrying. And fortunately, there was one officer during this situation that basically explained to all the other officers that the guy wasn't doing anything wrong and that they basically should leave him alone.
Was that here in Texas?
It was right here in Houston.
Really? In the Houston area?
Yep.
Yeah. So that proves your point. I mean, either some police officers, and I'm not picking on police officers, but some of them just are ignorant to the law, or they are maybe a little bit more anti-gun than we realize.
Yeah, that's correct. And also, a lot of people are just sensitive, and so if they see somebody out carrying a long gun, they really just freak out for no reason and will call the police. And, of course, the police, having to do their duty, have got to go investigate.
Yeah. Well, you know, I generally tell people it's not advisable to go walking around with a shotgun or a rifle out in the open. It's just simply because you're going to freak out a lot of people. I mean, I understand that this young guy was trying to get to and from the store without getting robbed, and that's probably kind of a unique situation.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that a month after that, of course, he was the police actually kind of trumped up a charge against him, which didn't actually exist. They went so far as to kind of make up a crime with the help of the Harris County DA's office. But that case was ultimately dismissed. But then a month later, he got hassled by a different police department for the exact same thing. So it just goes to show, unfortunately, here in Texas, we have a law that allows the police at least a window to begin hassling somebody for openly carrying a rifle or shotgun.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the disorderly conduct law. It is an act of disorderly conduct to display a deadly weapon, including a firearm, in a public place in a manner calculated to alarm. Now, there's no statutory definitions to the words calculated to alarm, and there's also been no court cases interpreting what calculated to alarm means. And so some police officers and prosecutors have taken it upon themselves to say that anybody who openly carries a rifle is clearly doing it to alarm people, therefore they're committing an act of disorderly conduct.
Yeah, so they made up their own definition of calculated to alarm.
Correct.
But now that would ultimately, if it went that far, it'd be decided by a jury, right?
That's correct. And a jury would have to determine basically what that means and whether or not the person manifested the intent in their mind to say, hey, I'm going to go scare some people with my long gun.
Very interesting. Interesting stuff.
It's a very poorly written law. It's been on the books for 40 years, and it doesn't have any appellate cases interpreting this. It's very strange, and that's because back in the olden days, the police used common sense, and they knew, you know, what calculated to alarm meant. It meant somebody running around, swinging a gun, you know, maybe pointing it at people. It didn't mean just the mere carrying of a gun across somebody's back or on a sling.
Yeah. Well, and even people that carry a long gun in the open with it slung across their back, I mean, there are a lot of citizens that would still interpret that as, you know, that they're calculating to alarm someone.
Right, and that's the position some prosecutors have taken. There are some prosecutors who agree that that's not a crime. But there are, you know, that's the thing, is that police and prosecutors have discretion. And so the prosecutors in one county may be reasonable and say, well, clearly they're not, if they're just carrying it, they're not doing anything wrong, don't bother them. But then there are prosecutors in other counties that say differently. In fact, there are different situations. I've actually been told by a prosecutor, whenever I posed the question as to why one person carrying a rifle was doing it as, you know, why this one person was arrested and this other person wasn't. And they basically said, well, if it's a group of people carrying rifles, then that's a demonstration. But if it's just one guy carrying a rifle, that's an act of disorderly conduct.
Huh. Now that's it. Okay. I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that viewpoint before.
Yeah, it made no sense whatsoever. But I was actually told that by a prosecutor.
Wow. Okay. That's something good to think about there.
Yes.
Well, before we sign off...
Like I said, that's what happens when you deal with these individual personalities and there's no standardized way of enforcing the law.
Which is exactly why concealed carriers need a service like yours.
Yeah, and that's what we provide. I mean, you know, a lot of people, we talk about the ultimate thing that we do is representation. But one of the biggest benefits to our members is the fact that anytime they have an issue or a question or need some advice with regard to firearms laws, they call and speak to an attorney. They don't consult a message board, which, you know, getting your law from a message board, probably not a good idea in general. But they don't have to look on a message board. They don't have to consult Wikipedia. They don't have to sit and try to figure out what the statute means. They don't have to look up cases. That's what we do, is that's part of the service that they get for $10.95 a month, is basically that they have a lawyer they can call and speak to about what the law is concerning firearms.
And that's huge. That's a huge benefit. I mean, I've never heard of a lawyer that will do that for $10.95 a month except through you. Most legal fees are a lot more per hour than that.
Yes, and that's one thing that we have over anybody else that has a similar service. I very highly doubt that they have lawyers standing by to answer firearms questions on a daily basis.
And lawyers that are trained to handle firearms questions as well.
Yes.
You know, which would be like you two. Now, there's you two. Do you have other lawyers on staff too?
Oh yes, absolutely. We've got lawyers all around the state that are program attorneys here at the office. We have five lawyers on staff for our, you know, we're the primary program attorneys. And then the states where we have multi-state program is present, we have several lawyers in those states.
Okay.
So if somebody calls up and says, you know, hey, I'm on vacation here in Florida and I have an issue and I need to know what the law is, we connect them with our Florida lawyers.
Yeah, that's awesome. That kind of a service, to be able to call a toll-free number and just ask generalized questions, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, I definitely think so. It really helps out the member. I mean, education is key at the end of the day. If you're going to make the choice to carry a firearm, you need to be educated.
Well, and let me say something about that, because, you know, you're exactly right. And one of the tools that anti-gun people use against us that carry guns is they say, oh, we're just a bunch of uneducated rednecks, you know? And they like to try to paint us with that kind of a brush. And so what's that?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you.
And I think that concealed carriers who stay educated and can talk intelligently, if they have a service like yours and they can learn about the laws and talk intelligently, all of a sudden that label of being an uneducated redneck gets thrown right out the window because you sound like you know what you're talking about.
Right, and of course that is one of our main goals. Is we, at the end of the day, we're Second Amendment advocates, and we want to make sure that the gun owner out there puts forward the best face possible for gun owners, because it'll benefit all of us at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Well, before we sign off, anything else about Texas Law Shield or U.S. Law Shield that you want listeners to know?
Well, if anybody ever has any questions, don't hesitate to go to our website or even just give us a call. If you want to talk to us and learn more about us, don't hesitate to give us a ring.
In case somebody is listening to this while they're driving, working out, or doing whatever, go ahead and give out both websites.
Well, for Texans, go to TexasLawShield.com. And then for non-Texans, go to USLawShield.com.
Okay. And name those other states that people live in that can sign up again.
You've got Florida, Oklahoma, Colorado, and Pennsylvania. And we are working every day to add more states.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Edwin, Michelle, thanks very much. And let's do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Bob.
No problem. Thanks. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Okay, thank you very much. By the way, they said that the coupon code HGWorld1 is still good. So if you sign up for a 12-month membership, you get 2 more months for free. So you get 14 months for the price of 12. Just use my coupon code for my show, HGWorld1. I'll put that in the show notes just in case you need to refer back to it. Edwin and Michelle, thank you very much. Check out their website, TexasLawShield.com or USLawShield.com. There was some pretty good information there that they shared, especially about some specific cases. I thought that was really good. Okay, next up, Scott Sylvester is a law enforcement officer in the state of California. He's been a law enforcement officer for quite some time. Sergeant, he's at the rank of sergeant, and Scott's also the host of my class. I'm going to Northern California to teach Beyond Concealed Carry on October 18th. I will be there teaching that class, and Scott's hosting the class. And it's also at the San Joaquin Gun Range. So I wanted Scott to come on and talk about concealed carry in California. How about that? Concealed carry in California, and there's some breakthroughs in concealed carry in California that maybe you don't know about. He's going to talk about that. And he gives us a pretty good law enforcement perspective on carrying in general. So here you go, Scott Sylvester from Northern California. Okay, for this segment, I've got my special guest joining me from the great state of California. I've got Scott Sylvester. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you, Bob. I'm deeply honored to be on the show.
Well, thank you. Now, you've been a listener for quite some time, I understand.
For the last couple of years, when I got into the world of podcasting and started my long commute, I needed something to listen to. And, you know, guns being a hobby, things like that. I started searching around. I ran across the Handgun World podcast. I was like, oh, I like this guy.
Oh, gosh.
Good talker, good information, very humble, basic perspective. I really enjoyed the show, and usually I'm a couple of weeks behind on the episodes. I'm just trying to, you know, stay on top of things. But you have a great show, Bob. I really enjoy your guests. You know, every time John Hodaway's on or Ben Brannon's on, I love listening to those guys. They've got good stuff to say, and you're doing a great job.
Thank you very much. Hodaway should be coming up again pretty soon, and I'm going to try to stick the microphone in Ben's face the next time we get together, which I think is going to be in a week or so. So, thank you. Well, I wanted to bring you on, Scott, because you're also a law enforcement officer, and you're also an instructor. Tell us about that.
Yes, sir. Well, I work for a large sheriff's agency out here in one of the 9 major Bay Area counties. I was a deputy sheriff for about 12 and a half years. The last couple of years, I promoted to the rank of sergeant, so now I supervise. So I don't really get to do a lot of police work. I get to watch other people do police work.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know.
You paid your dues, though.
Exciting new step. And with our agency, I've gotten a lot of fascinating opportunities working in our corrections division, working our patrol division, our training division. Got to work at our airport division, which was exciting. I'm also one of our use of force instructors, teaching defensive tactics. And, you know, just firearms was always a hobby of mine, so got into the firearm side of things. and as well as the medical stuff. I teach for our first aid CPR and a little bit of tactical med stuff for our agency as well.
Yeah, so you...
pretty busy.
You're busy. So you're teaching law enforcement both self-defense and medical, and then you're also teaching to the public too, aren't you?
Yeah, and that all came about through just sort of word of mouth from friends. I had some friends who picked up some firearms and gave them to their children. I don't say children, they're 25 and 23 years old. They're not kids by any means, but... my friend approached me and said, hey, I know you're really good with guns. You're a teacher. Would you mind working with them and giving them some safety stuff? And so, you know, I kind of threw together a curriculum. We ran a little ad hoc class for a couple of days, had a great time. I had another friend ask me, hey, I got this new gun. I want to learn to shoot my pistol. And then later on, he bought a shotgun. I brought him up to, you know, my in-laws have some property that we get to shoot at, and, ran them through a little course. And finally, my wife, who's the smart one in the family, said, you know, why don't you, you know, run a business? Why don't you teach? You really love doing this. You're good at it, and, you know, you could probably make some money doing this. So that's kind of the first step. That's where it started.
I think it's cool. The name of your company is One Weapon Any Tool, and it can be found at oneweaponanytool.com. I like the name. I like the name. Tell us what that means.
Yeah, when I was... you know, coming up with a company idea, I really wanted to focus on the idea that your mind is what the weapon is. You got to train your mind. You got to prepare your mind, things like that. It doesn't matter what you have around you, whether it be a, you know, a stick, a sharp knife, a handgun, a rifle. Those are the tools. But how you apply those is depends on how well you've trained yourself, trained your mind. And so I really kind of kicked around a lot of ideas and names and trying to come up with stuff. And I finally settled on the One Weapon, Any Tool name. And it's kind of funny. I didn't know this when I picked the name at the time, but the U.S. Marine Corps has one called One Mind, Any Weapon.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And so unexpectedly, I didn't even know that they had already had a training system that they use called One Mind, Any Weapon. And so when I came up with One Weapon, Any Tool, it was kind of a unique little tie-in there. And a friend of mine who's in the Marines pointed that out to me. And so I just really wanted to start bringing some of the self-defense mindset to the civilian, to the public, and teach them the warrior mindset, the winning mindset, and teach them that it's okay to defend yourself. It's okay to use violence to protect your family. I don't think that they get that message as clearly as some people do in the law enforcement or military side of things.
Yeah, I think that's really neat, and I like your warrior mindset that you got on your website and everything. It's pretty cool. I noticed it says here you've got 14 years of concealed carry experience. Now in California, you know, you're a law enforcement officer. I don't think there's a whole lot of civilians in California that have 14 years of concealed carry experience, are there?
Not too many, no. California we're starting to change the way we do our concealed carry. You know, most of my carry experience began when I got into law enforcement. So that's where all my, you know, off-duty carry practice and stuff came from, experimenting with different holsters and techniques and how to carry it and inside and outside and all the different little pitfalls. You know, we didn't have anybody teach us how to carry concealed. They just said, hey, you can do it. You're a cop now. Good luck.
Yeah.
you know, now in California, now the concealed carry is coming. We're also trying to get our curriculum together for that because California is changing from a may-issue state to where they might give you one if you could come up with a good enough reason. Now we're going to be transitioning to a shall-issue state thanks to a lawsuit out of, I believe it was San Diego. So some exciting stuff on the horizon for that. Basically the Ninth Circuit determined that self-defense is a good enough reason to request a concealed carry permit.
Yeah, of course it is.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, of course self-defense is a good enough reason. Was this lawsuit backed by the Second Amendment Foundation?
There were several people involved. I know the Second Amendment Foundation was involved. CalSFL, Gun Owners of California were all kind of chipped in on that. And the name escapes me at the moment. I'm going to have to try to think of it.
CalGuns?
The name of the lawsuit. But our big, you know, political supporters out here inside of our state is CalFFL, C-A-L-F-F-L. They're the Federal Firearms License Group and dealers who sell here in California. And then we also have Gun Owners of California, which is another really good, positive, you know, proactive legislative, you know, political action committee that helps us promote Second Amendment and, you know, fight some of the bizarre and crazy bills they come up with out here.
Yeah, so this recent Ninth Circuit Court decision basically says that self-defense is a good enough right, which, duh, I wonder how long it took him. I wonder why he's taken so long to get that. But that's good news. That's good. And you were telling me offline before we started doing this recording, I guess there's some sheriffs kind of putting up some resistance to that, huh?
Yeah, because the way they do it is you have to go to your local sheriff's agency, and then you have to go to one of their pre-approved vendors, and they have to put you through the paperwork process. And some of the more rural counties that we have are giving them away, handing out the permits very, very easily. You know, you pay your money, you take your training course, you show that you've completed it and you're certified, and they process it. Other ones are more liberal counties, mostly towards the coast, where our city areas, they're really resistant to that, and so they make you jump through a lot of hoops. They have long delays, unnecessary delays. Not everybody or all the sheriffs are actually on board with this. So obviously we have resistance. They don't want people carrying guns, especially in our big city, you know, heavily populated areas like Stockton, Oakland, you know, San Francisco.
Yeah, which, you know,
it's almost another country in itself. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, that's where, you know, sometimes that's where you need a gun the most.
And, yeah, that's unfortunate that those people have even more hurdles to overcome. So, it, like I said, it's new. It's coming out. It's kind of interesting to see how this is going to go over the next year or so as this evolves.
You know, you mentioned Oakland. I'm thinking, oh, gosh, I've been to Oakland many, many times, and it's been many years since I've been there, but I would not go back to Oakland unless I had the right to carry a gun.
If any reason I can find to stay out of Oakland, I do.
I wonder, it's going to be interesting to follow this. It's going to be interesting to follow it because I wonder now, you know, once this actually kind of takes hold with California being a may issue or a shall issue state, I wonder how that's going to affect reciprocity. I wonder if any, they're going to offer reciprocity to any other concealed carry permits.
I imagine with all of the restrictions that we have here, if you can get one in California, you're probably good for most of the other 50 states just because of the stringent standards and training that they make you go through. The minimum training in California now for concealed carry for most counties is a 16-hour initial course, and I believe it's an 8-hour annual requal that you have to go to.
You know, listening to you makes me realize that sometimes I take my gun rights here in Texas for granted.
And we all wish we had things like Texas, good laws like you do in Texas. I was joking with a friend of mine who moved out of California recently. You know, I told him, hey, when you get back to America, you know, call us over here in the People's Republic of California and let us know how it's going.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Well, you know, you got to be careful with that concealed carry stuff out there, though, because it turns your state into the wild, wild west, and there's blood in the streets, and people are shooting each other for no reason. You know that now.
And it's just not the case, Bob. I wish, you know, even I know, sarcastic as you're being, everywhere that has concealed carry, crime goes down. And there's this statistic after statistic and facts that can prove it, but just we have a very liberal state that facts don't matter to them. They live in a fantasy world out here.
Yeah, they do, but it looks like the tide is turning. You know, it happened with Illinois. Who'd have thought that Illinois would eventually be a shall issue, although they're putting up a lot of resistance, too.
Yeah, and we, you know, I was watching Illinois closely. When they got theirs, I was like, oh, there's hope. Maybe us in California, and here we are about a year or so later, maybe two now. It's coming to our state, so it's exciting times. They say it's good to live in interesting times, right?
It is good to live in interesting times, yeah. So what's your primary carry gun, Scott?
My primary gun is my duty weapon, actually. We are issued a Sig Sauer P226. I have mine equipped with a X200 Surefire flashlight, And they also give us the Crimson Trace laser grips. The thing is, a boat anchor, it's huge. I'm not going to lie to you. But it is literally, as SIG advertises on their website, it is the hell and back reliable. That gun, I have beat it up, dropped it, everything imaginable in training that you can put that gun through, and it always functions all the time. Really, really impressed with it.
Yeah, the SIG 226 is a marvelous handgun. That was the first handgun that I ever owned. One of those things, I should have never sold it, shame on me, but they're phenomenal weapons.
Yeah, it's really great. And over the years, I've had a couple of different guns that I've carried off duty, because they need something a little smaller. So I have an H&K compact, little USP that's worked phenomenally for me as well. It's a little bit smaller, a little bit easier to hide. I've recently been flirting with the Sig Sauer 938. It's their tiny little 1911 style and 9mm. I have a love-hate relationship with that gun right now.
I had a chance to shoot one of those recently at the end of a class that Ben and I taught, and it was okay. Another student brought it to class. It was okay. It recoils a lot more than I ever thought it would.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of bite to it because of the tiny little frame throwing that 9mm downrange. But I've had a lot of failure to feed issues. I've got some light primer strike issues. I've double feed on me constantly because there's so much spring tension in that little gun to make it function. And the magazine's such a strong spring force feeding the ammo into it to make it function that sometimes it'll double feed. So, and then right now I'm going through a safety problem after my last training session I had with the gun where I ran a couple hundred rounds through it. Again, some failure to feed issues and jamming issues. Now, when you can, if you put the hammer back, safety on, pull the trigger, if you take the safety off, the hammer drops. That's a huge safety issue right now. So that gun's probably going back to SIG.
Yeah.
Call them on Monday and see if they can help me out.
Yeah, it should go back to SIG. If you ever decide to make a change and you like small little 9mm, let me strongly recommend the Smith & Wesson Shield.
I shot a Shield recently. I was actually very impressed with it. Do you know, Bob, possibly, can I get an M&P Shield without the manual safety?
Guess what?
Model like that?
Guess what? They're shipping now. I just ordered one 3 days ago. My local gun dealer said it's probably going to be here Wednesday, so by the time this podcast airs, I will probably have it. So the answer is yes. They're starting to come out of Smith & Wesson already. My dealer didn't believe it. I went over there and I said, hey, can you order one of these? And he goes, well, they're not shipping. I said, could you call and find out? So he called his distributor, and sure enough, his distributor said, yeah, I can send you two of them. So one of them's got my name on it. As soon as I get the phone call from the dealer, I'm going to go pick it up.
That's outstanding. I will look forward to the next episode where you give a review of it.
Yeah, I'll give them my initial impressions of it, yes.
That would be awesome. I'm looking forward to that.
So yeah, as a matter of fact,
it's actually a great option.
Yeah. Well, Scott, let's talk about the classes that you teach a little bit, and then I have some interesting questions to ask you about concealed carry in California, but I see you teach some NRA courses.
Yeah, once I kind of started putting the company together, you know, obviously you need some kind of a certification, and so I started off with the, you know, National Rifle Association. They have an awesome variety of courses for people who want to learn to shoot. And they have a great array of instructor courses as well. So I became an NRA basic pistol instructor, took their personal protection and the home training course and became an instructor for that, and then pooled a lot of my other knowledge just working with, you know, shotguns and AR-style platform rifles. And handguns are really my specialty. I love shooting pistols and started writing kind of my own curriculum for a lot of those things. And now we're starting to put together, take our personal protection and the home curriculum and develop that into a course where we come to your house and I'll teach you how to clear your own house.
That's cool.
So that way if someone breaks in, you know what's cover in your house, what's concealment in your house, how you can move around and check around corners safely to get to your child's bedroom and get them safely out of a bad situation if you need to. So we're kind of building that one into it, and now we've got a couple of new instructors coming online with me that I've known for years. They're going to start helping me teach and expand our courses even more because they've got a lot more knowledge. So it's exciting.
Yeah. Are you finding a lot of interest in California for handgun training?
There's a lot of instructors all over California. There's a lot of people taking training all the time. People are really, really getting into it. Right now, you know, the concealed carry thing is starting to really get big, so everybody's really asking for the concealed carry training. Concealed carry training is all we hear about. But I keep telling people, look, you don't just pick up a gun and start carrying concealed. Maybe you should take an NRA basic pistol course first. You know,
yeah.
Spend some time learning the ins and outs and how that gun functions and how you want to carry it before you decide to do that every day. It's not an easy choice.
I'm glad you do that. I'm glad you say that. I mean, that's excellent because, you know, we all know the average person runs down to their gun shop, buys their first gun, decides they're going to start carrying. And you and I both know, I mean, that's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that someone goes and buys a gun and makes the decision. But you and I both know if a bad guy who is savvy attacks them and they don't have any training outside of the 16 hours in California that they sit through to satisfy the state, they may not be as effective with that gun as they think they can be.
Yeah, or you get a gun like the 938 I was telling you about that isn't exactly reliable all the time. And so you buy this great gun, you think it's going to be good because you spent a lot of money on it, has 6 hours on the side of it, and now when you really, really need it, it's not feeding or it's not functioning or, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then again, going back to the mindset side of our company, we talk a lot about that. What's the media going to say about you? What's your neighbors going to say about you? You know, do you go to church? What are your fellow churchgoers and people in your community going to say about you? Have you mentally prepared yourself running these kind of, I call them when-then scenarios to your mind?
Yeah.
I used to call it what-if, but what-if is kind of subjective, right? Because, you know, what if the space shuttle falls out of the sky, right? Anything can be a what-if, but really it's more when-then. When you see the bad guy in the 7-Eleven pointing the gun at the clerk, then you're going to do what?
Yeah, and they don't know.
Yeah, so I really try to push that side of my classes as well. I want you guys to think. You have to be able to use the gun and also think while you're doing it and make good decisions.
Yeah, and well, not only make good decisions, but be effective, be able to win the fight, you know, and then we all know, what are you going to do afterwards, after you win the fight? Okay, great, you've won the fight, you get to go home to your family, congratulations, now another fight starts after that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, because now you're going to have all the legal ramifications. You are going to have to talk to the police, you know, and you're going to get judged by your community, your friends, your family. It's not an easy choice, and so I really try to make people realize that, you know, carrying a gun sounds like a great idea, but there's a lot more to it than just strapping on a holster and walking out your front door.
So. Well, yeah, there, and you know, it, to me, it's kind of a scary thought that there are a lot of people who bought a gun, stuck it in the holster, strapped it on, and they walked out their front door. And again, you know, here in Texas, for example, I'll give you an example. Texas shrunk the training time down to 4 hours from 8 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, okay, there's a school of thought that says the Second Amendment is my concealed carry permit. And I subscribe to that because, let's face it, it's part of the Bill of Rights. We have an inherent right to self-defense. It's part of the Bill of Rights. The framers put it in the Constitution, in the first 10 amendments. It's part of the Bill of Rights. So,
yes, it is.
Legally, we should not have to ask permission from the state and get a license. There's another school of thought that says, okay, great, you got a gun now. It's your constitutional right. But do you know what you're doing with it? And, you know, some people, I think, kind of get a little insulted because if you even slightly imply that maybe they're not quite as skilled as they should be with it, that they sort of get insulted. You ever find that out?
To a certain extent, I've experienced all those schools of thought from different people I've talked to, and I do believe that the Bill of Rights, the Constitution established by our forefathers, who are way smarter than anybody I know in government right now.
Yeah, you got that right.
Put that in there. It's an important right, and everybody should have that right to self-defense. I have no problem with anybody carrying a firearm. But I really want people to actually spend some time thinking about what a responsibility that is. I really want some people to encourage them to take some training to put a few rounds through that gun, make sure that it meets the needs that they bought it for. I'm sure in your classes you've met somebody that says, I got this, you know, brand new gun. It's this 50 caliber Desert Eagle. It's going to be my concealed carry gun. And you go, really?
Yeah, right.
Have you ever fired that? Are you sure? You know, does it really meet your needs? Like,
Well, what I think is funny, never have had anybody come to a class with a Desert Eagle 50 caliber yet, but what I do think is funny is I do see some people that they come to my classes with these giant guns, you know, these big suckers. I mean, you know, everything from a full size 1911 to this massive race. People have come with race guns and all that. And I know that they're not concealing those every day. It's rare that somebody sticks a full size 5-inch 38-ounce unloaded 1911, weighs 38 ounces unloaded. It's rare that they carry that each and every single day. Most of them are probably carrying a smaller gun, and I know that there's some exceptions, so please don't anybody send me hate mail saying, oh, you know, Bob, you're a jerk, I carry a full size 1911 every day. Good on you. But most people are sticking a smaller gun in their pocket, in their holster, doing something like that. And I wish they would come to training class with those guns. Don't come to training class with your competition race gun. Come with what you carry.
And I tell people, dress the way you carry as well.
Exactly.
If you wear a business suit and a tie every single day, you need to wear a business suit to my class with a tie. Because that's how you're going to have to draw from it. If you wear an inside-the-waistband holster with your shirt tucked in over it, that's a great way to carry. Now I want you to draw from it quickly. And I'm going to hold a shot timer to you, and we're going to see if you can defend yourself. Just really put them through their paces.
Yeah, but if there's anybody in Texas that wears a suit every day, if you come to a course in the summer when it's 100 degrees, you don't have to wear your suit.
Yeah, you don't get to some of that medical training as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. On the range. But that was one of my chief complaints, like when I went to an IDPA match recently up in Sacramento. Everybody's there with their race guns. They've got these really easy, lightweight concealment garments on or these tactical vests. And as you watch these people walking around competing, you're like, I would guarantee you, one, you don't carry that gun, and two, you certainly don't dress like that walking around every single day.
No, they don't. They don't wear those nice little fishing vests.
Yeah, so here comes your hate mail from the competitive crowd. But
yeah, well, I said the same thing last week. I'll probably get a bunch of... No, I love competition. I love IDPA. As a matter of fact, I'm talking to you on a Saturday night. I competed in IDPA this morning. It was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a blast. It's a blast, but you're right. If you go to a competition match and you watch these men and women competing, they don't dress like that. They typically don't carry that kind of gun. And the scenarios are quite different than what they're going to run into on the street.
But at least they're out there training. At least they're out there trying and working through some of these problems and preparing to deal with multiple attackers.
That's right.
You know, it's not this one-shot, one-person bad guy anymore. You know, we have gangs of people roving around. So anybody that's out there at least going through an IDPA match or USPSA or whatever some of the other popular ones are, as long as you're working hard at it and you're drawing from concealment and you're doing something, I already have more respect for you than the guy who, you know, takes a gun out of a box, never fired it, straps it on and goes.
Me too. Me too. I got a lot more respect for, yeah, especially, you know, like you said, the guy that just straps it on and goes out there and says, okay, I got me a gun now, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Scott, you've been in law enforcement in California for how long?
For 14 years now.
Okay. So, if you don't mind, without divulging confidential details, you got any war stories about civilian gun defense that you've run into?
We haven't had a lot in our county. We're a very liberal county. Oakland is a major city in our county, so we don't really hand out a whole lot of concealed carry permits. I have run across homeowners. We had one grandma in her home one night, and we had a 911 call from that area, and we came to the door, we're knocking on the door, trying to get the attention of her inside, and she comes to the door with her, 38 police special, ready to handle business. I didn't know who it was out there. I heard these loud noises, and thank goodness it's you. And we're like, well, good job. Ready to protect yourself, ma'am. You have a very nice day.
And don't point the muzzle at me, ma'am.
Yeah, and she was very, very, you know, polite about the whole thing. She put the gun on the couch when we were in the house, and it turned out to, you know, kind of be a faulty phone on the 911 malfunction. But, you know, a lot of citizens have guns in California to protect themselves. You know, all the negative gun things I've ever run across were criminals that we took guns off of. And those were good times for us. Those were the people that shouldn't have guns that we took them away from, and I feel happy and good about that.
Wait, hold on. I got it. Well, what's going on? You have strict gun laws in California. You mean the criminals have guns?
Oh, yeah, they carry them on their dashboard, down their front waistband of their pants. They actually have more sophisticated firearms than we do. They don't have bullet buttons on their AK-47s like we do, or bullet buttons on their AR-15s. They even have high capacity magazines the criminals do.
Really? You mean they don't say, hey, wait a minute, there's a state law against these, we better not carry them?
Yeah, even micro stamping didn't even stop the criminals. They are still able to acquire, you know, select fire, high capacity firearms that they use to victimize innocent people.
And given all that being truth, there are still sheriffs in the state of California that don't get it?
Like I said, Bob, it's a slow process. We will win them all over with time.
Yeah. You know, sarcasm there, but it's just amazing. It just blows my mind. And I know that there are people from other countries that are listening into my show, too, because they send me emails like, you know, and they say the same thing. It's like California. It's like New Jersey. And, you know, some countries, having a gun is just completely outright banned. You just can't even have it, and yet the criminals have them too. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, Australia is a perfect example of that.
Who?
Australia, when they took all the guns from the citizens, and now Australia has gun crimes out of control.
Yeah, exactly.
The citizens have them, but all the criminals do.
Yeah, Scott, let me ask you something about California. What is the right that a citizen has in their house to protect themselves?
For California, we have, you're allowed to protect yourself and your family. You're allowed to use deadly force to against an imminent threat of death or great bodily injury against you or a third party, a loved one, someone else. So I can shoot a bad guy who's not a threat directly to me, but he may be threatening you. I can still, you know, shoot him if he presents a likelihood of death or great bodily injury. Now, if someone breaks into my house and I hear them and I grab, you know, Roscoe off the shelf, that's my duty gun, and go down, you know, the top of my stairs and I point my gun at him and he's got my TV and he runs out the door, he's going to get a free TV that day. We're not allowed to shoot anybody over a property crime.
Okay.
It's kind of right. how we, you know, look at it out here on the left coast.
Yeah, no property crime, but if he drops the TV, turns around, and whips out a handgun and points it at you, all bets are off, right?
Yeah, now we have an imminent threat. Obviously, death or great bodily injury can be caused by the, you know, knife or handgun or whatever tool he chooses to use. Now we've got the green light to protect yourself. That's an easy one. I shouldn't say easy because you're still going to, the police are going to come, you're going to go downtown with them, you're going to have a conversation. And all the media and everything else uproar surrounding that. But
yeah.
Self-defense is allowed.
Yeah, and you're you know, definitely the local law enforcement and the media are not going to, you know, give you a pat on the back and say, hey, attaboy, can I buy you lunch tomorrow?
No, they're not.
You're not going to get that. Now, do you have a duty to retreat in California?
We ask you to... I don't think it's necessarily a duty to retreat, but they look favorably on people who do. And also, you can't create your own exigency in California. So if he's walking towards my front door with my TV, I can't go stand between him and the door and block him from coming out because now I'm creating the situation. So pretty much you kind of have to let them do their thing until they present a threat to you.
Yeah. All right. That's you know, it's different than what we have in some of the more gun-friendly states, but, you know, at least people have a right in their own homes to take care of business if they're going to be harmed or a family member is going to be harmed.
And really, that's all it's about. I mean, you know, we can get a new TV, we can fix our window. While I don't like the idea of people taking my stuff, as long as my family's safe, my kid's safe, my wife is safe, that's all that's really important.
Yeah. At the end of the day, that is what's really important. Well, we're going to wrap this up in about 5 minutes, but Scott, I just want to say this to all the listeners who are listening. Scott is hosting me. He's going to be hosting me coming out there on October 18th at the San Joaquin. It's called the San Joaquin Rifle and Pistol Club, right?
Yeah, San Joaquin Rifle Pistol Range. They're in Linden, California, which is a tiny little rural town outside of the port city of Stockton.
Yeah, October 18th, I'm going to teach Beyond Concealed Carry. Unfortunately, Ben couldn't make the trip, but I'm pretty capable of teaching the course, and we're going to start promptly at about 8:30, probably get done about 5:30. The cool thing about this class, to all of you California area listeners, it's going to include a barbecue lunch as part of your investment in the class.
It's going to be a good time. I was down today. I reserved the range for us. We got the big, big range that they just recently are finishing completing. So, you know, we can host probably up to 15 to 20 students. Bob, you tell me how many you want, and, you know, up to 20, and we'll take that many. We'll barbecue some, you know, some hot dogs, hamburgers. We'll have a great time.
Yeah, it's going
to
be
forward to having you out here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to coming out there. Thanks for all the work you've put in so far in hosting me to come out there. And if people want to sign up for the course, they can go to handgunworld.com. They can see a link right there. I always put all my classes in the menu of my website, so pretty easy to find. There's a course description and everything and a sign-up link. I got a feeling that this thing is going to sell out and sell out fairly quickly. So for you California folks, it is in Northern California, so Southern California residents may have quite of a drive, but I'll make it worth your time if you want to come up from the South.
Yeah, Bob, I'll send you some information on where they can stay if they want to drive up for the class. You know, everything's probably about a 20, 30-minute drive to the range because, like I said, Linden is a very rural farming community, and the family that owns the range, Christine Zador and her family, it's their ranch that they turned into a range for the public to use.
That's cool.
I should get Christine on. You should get Christine on the show and do an interview with her. I'm sure she'd give you a great interview on the hurdles of owning a range in California as well.
Oh, I'd like to do that. Tell Christine I'm interested, highly interested. Give her my email address. Have her make contact with me. I'll definitely set that up. That'd be a cool interview, owning a range in California. I bet she's got some interesting stuff.
Yeah, I will connect you to, for sure.
Yeah, that's good. Scott, thank you very much. Go ahead and give out your website one more time.
Thank you, Bob. It was great to be on the show. You can find us at www.oneweaponanytool.com, just all one word, or the Facebook page, facebook.com/theoneweaponanytool. It's usually the most frequently updated area. You can find updated information on Facebook because it's simple. We're also on Twitter at @1weaponanytool.
Yeah, and I see before I get out there in October, you've got quite a few classes in July and August coming up as well.
Yeah, we've got our defensive pistol class, which is kind of our intermediate pistol course where you're going to learn to start working from a holster, shoot from different angles and different positions. Always the NRA basic pistol. That's a fabulous course for anybody who wants to learn to shoot. You don't even have to have a gun. We will rent you a firearm so you can come and learn a new skill. And we're actually branching out into our first AR course of the year.
Yeah, I see that. Scott, thank you very much. Best of luck to you. Thanks for your time in law enforcement. I appreciate that. I'll sign off by saying thank you, Sergeant.
Thank you, sir. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Scott, thank you very much, and sir, I very much appreciate you stepping up and hosting my class. Ben's not making that trip, but I'm going to be out there, and I'm perfectly capable of teaching Beyond Concealed Carry. It's going to be great. Sign-ups have already started. There is a limited space in that class. All right? We can only have a certain amount of people based on the number of safety officers.
that we have. So don't procrastinate. Space is limited. It's probably going to be a sellout. Already got a few people signed up for it, and the class is not even until October, October the 18th. Scott, very much. Thanks very much for coming on. Thank you for serving us, serving California and your local county in your law enforcement career, and I appreciate that. I'd like to wrap up the show by covering a couple things. I already talked about the California class. Don't forget about the night fighting class. Ben and I are teaching pistol fighting dynamics December 6th in San Antonio. You know what? So many gunfights, so many civilian self-defense fights occur in low light or at night. Do you know how to use your handgun at night? It's a completely different set of circumstances. You won't believe it. Come to our night class if you are within striking distance and a reasonable distance of San Antonio, December 6th. Ben is teaching an AR-specific rifle class October 11th, the week before I go out to California. Now, if you don't have an AR, you want to come with an AK, Mini 14, something like that, or even a pistol caliber carbine, you can come to that. It is going to be AR specific, but you will get a lot out of it anyway. We've had people do that. October 11th, Saturday, that's also going to be in San Antonio at Cedar Ridge Range. There are a few spots left for Beyond Concealed Carry in Houston, September 27th. Don't forget about Beyond Concealed Carry Houston, September 27th. Only about three spots left. And, of course, once again, congratulations. In the middle of the week, I announced the winners in the Shooters Club giveaway. Congratulations to all eight winners. If you want to support the show and support the efforts that Ben and I do, consider joining the Shooters Club. For an entire year, you get to access all of the video and audio content that we have up there, unique information that we've never covered. And by the way, if you have not got a chance to get to one of our classes, but you want the next best thing, signing up for our video membership, the Shooters Club, is the next best thing. $75 a year, or you can do the $8 a month program. Go to handgunworld.com, click the Shooters Club page, and you can sign up. Last but not least, support my show. Don't spend any extra money. The next time that you need to make a purchase through Amazon, go over to handgunworld.com, click on the Amazon store, and make your Amazon purchase through my affiliate link. It'll help out the show financially, and I appreciate that very much. Okay, folks, thanks for listening to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. Thanks again for tuning in. Hopefully you enjoyed these two interviews. If you want to make comments, go to the website, and underneath each podcast posting is an area where you can make a lot of comments. Please do that. I'd appreciate that. Or on Facebook, follow me on Facebook. Just search Handgun World, and you can make comments there. I post a link for every podcast on the Facebook page as well. Thanks again, folks. Remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting only a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.